4. The Gospels and Modern Science. The General Genealogies of Jesus. The Gospels contain very few passages which give rise to a confrontation with modern scientific data. Firstly, however, there are many descriptions referring to miracles which hardly lend themselves to scientific comment. The miracles concern people, the healing of the sick, the insane, blind, paralytic, the healing of lepers, resurrection of Lazarus, as well as the purely material phenomena that lie outside the laws of nature, the description of Jesus walking on water that held him up, the changing of the water into wine. Sometimes a natural phenomenon is seen from an unusual angle by virtue of the fact that the time element is very short, the immediate calming of the storm, the instantaneous withering of the fig tree, the miracle catch of fish, as if all the fish in the sea had come together at exactly the place where the nets were cast. God intervenes in his omnipotent power in all these episodes. One need not be surprised by what he is able to achieve. By human standards it is stupendous, but for him it is not. This does not at all mean that a believer should forget science. A belief in divine miracles and in science is quite compatible. One is on a divine scale, the other on a human one. Personally, I am very willing to believe that Jesus cured a leper, but I cannot accept the fact that a text is declared authentic and inspired by God when I read that only 20 generations existed between the first man and Abraham. Luke says this in his Gospel, 3:23-28. We shall see in a moment the reasons that show why Luke's text, like the Old Testament text on the same theme, is quite simply a product of human imagination. The Gospels, like the Quran, give us the same description of Jesus's biological origins. The formation of Jesus in the maternal uterus occurred in circumstances which lay outside the laws of nature common to all human beings. The ovule produced by the mother's ovary did not need to join with the spermatozoon, which should have come from his father, to form the embryo and hence a viable infant. The phenomenon of the birth of a normal individual without the fertilizing action of the male is called parthenogenesis. In the animal kingdom, parthenogenesis can be observed under certain conditions. This is true for various insects, certain invertebrates and, very occasionally, a select breed of bird. By way of experiment, it has been possible, for example, in certain mammals, female rabbits, to obtain the beginnings of a development of the ovule into an embryo at an extremely rudimentary stage without any intervention of spermatozoon. It was not possible to go any further, however, and an example of complete parthenogenesis, whether experimental or natural, is unknown. Jesus is a unique case. Mary was a virgin mother. She preserved her virginity, and did not have any children apart from Jesus. Jesus is a biological exception. The genealogies of Jesus. The two genealogies contained in Matthew's and Luke's Gospels give rise to problems of verisimilitude and conformity with scientific data, and hence authenticity. These problems are a source of great embarrassment to Christian commentators because the latter refuse to see in them what is obviously the product of human imagination. The authors of the sacerdotal text of Genesis, 6th century before Christ, had already been inspired by imagination for their genealogies of the first men. It again inspired Matthew and Luke for the data they did not take from the Old Testament. One must straight away note that the male genealogies have absolutely no relevance to Jesus. Were one to give a genealogy to Mary's only son, who was without a biological father, it would have to be the genealogy of his mother Mary. Here is the text of the Revised Standard Version of the Bible, 1952. The genealogy according to Matthew is at the beginning of his Gospel. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac was the father of Jacob. Jacob was the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah was the father of Perez and Zerah by Tamar. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron was the father of Ram. Ram was the father of Aminadab. Aminadab was the father of Nashon. Nahshon was the father of Salmon. Salmon was the father of Boaz by Rahab. Boaz was the father of Obed by Ruth. Obed was the father of Jesse. Jesse was the father of David the king. David was the father of Solomon by the wife of Uriah. Solomon was the father of Rehoboam. Rehoboam was the father of Abijah. Abijah was the father of Asa. Asa was the father of Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat was the father of Joram. Joram was the father of Uzziah. Uzziah was the father of Jotham. Jotham was the father of Ahaz. Ahaz was the father of Hezekiah. Hezekiah was the father of Manasseh. Manasseh was the father of Amos. Amos was the father of Josiah. Josiah was the father of Jehoniah and his brothers. At the time of the deportation to Babylon. After the deportation to Babylon. Jehoniah was the father of Shealtiel. Shealtiel was the father of Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel was the father of Obiat. Obiat was the father of Eliakim. Eliakim was the father of Asor. Asor was the father of Zadok. Zadok was the father of Ahim. Ahim was the father of Eliud. Eliud was the father of Eleazar. Eleazar was the father of Mathan. Mathan was the father of Jacob. Jacob was the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom Jesus was born, who was called Christ. So all the generations from Abraham to David were 14 generations, and from David to the deportation to Babylon 14 generations, and from the deportation to Babylon to the Christ 14 generations. Matthew 1:17. The genealogy given by Luke 3:23-38, is different from Matthew. The text reproduced here is from the Revised Standard Version of the Bible. Jesus, when he began his ministry, was about 30 years of age, being the son, as was supposed, of Joseph, the son of Heli, the son of Mathat, the son of Levi, the son of Melchi, the son of Janai, the son of Joseph, the son of Mattathias, the son of Amos, the son of Nahum, the son of Jesli, the son of Nagai, the son of Mart, the son of Mattathias, the son of Semain, the son of Joseph, the son of Joda, the son of Joanan, the son of Resa, the son of Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, the son of Neri, the son of Melchi, the son of Adi, the son of Kasam, the son of Elmadam, the son of the son of Joshua, the son of Eleazar, the son of Chorim, the son of Mathat, the son of Levi, the son of Simeon, the son of Judah, the son of Joseph, the son of Jonam, the son of Eliakim, the son of Meliah, the son of Mena, the son of Mattatha, the son of Nathan, the son of David, the son of Jesse, the son of Obed, the son of Boaz, the son of Salah, the son of Nahshon, the son of Amminadab, the son of Admin, the son of Ammi, the son of Hezron, the son of Perez, the son of Judah, the son of Jacob, the son of Isaac, the son of Abraham, the son of Terah, the son of Nahor, the son of Serug, the son of Reu, the son of Peleg, the son of Eber, the son of Shelah, the son of Canaan, the son of Arphaxad, the son of Shem, the son of Noah, the son of Lamech, the son of Methuselah, the son of Enoch, the son of Jared, the son of Mahalalel, the son of Canaan, the son of Enos, the son of Seth, the son of Adam, the son of God. The genealogies appear more clearly when presented in two tables, one showing the genealogy before David and the other after him. Variations in the manuscripts and in relation to the Old Testament. Apart from variations in spelling, the following must be mentioned. A. Matthew's Gospel. The genealogy has disappeared from the Codex Bezicantabrigensis, a very important 6th-century manuscript in both Greek and Latin. It has completely disappeared from the Greek text and also a large part of the Latin text. It may quite simply be that the first pages were lost. One must note here the great liberties Matthew has taken with the Old Testament. He has pared down the genealogies for the sake of a strange numerical demonstration, which, in the end, he does not give, as we shall see. B. Luke's Gospel. Before Abraham, Luke mentions 20 names, the Old Testament only mentions 19, see Table of Adam's Descendants in the Old Testament section of this work. After Arphaxad, number 12, Luke has added a person called Canaan, number 13, who is not mentioned in Genesis as the son of Arphaxad. From Abraham to David, 14 to 16 names are found according to the manuscripts. From David to Jesus. The most important variation is the Codex Bezicantabrigensis, which attributes to Luke a whimsical genealogy taken from Matthew and to which the scribe has added 5 names. Unfortunately, the genealogy of Matthew's Gospel has disappeared from this manuscript, so that comparison is no longer possible. Critical examination of the texts. We are here faced with 2 different genealogies having 1 essential point in common: they both pass via Abraham and David. To make this examination easier, we shall separate the whole into 3 critical sections. From Adam to Abraham. From Abraham to David. From David to Jesus. The period from Adam to Abraham. Matthew began his genealogy with Abraham, so we are not concerned with his text here. Luke alone provides information on Abraham's ancestors going back to Adam, 20 names, 19 of which are to be found in Genesis, chapters 4, 5 and 11, as has already been stated. Is it possible to believe that only 19 or 20 generations of human beings existed before Abraham? The problem has been examined in the discussion of the Old Testament. If one looks at the Table of Adam's Descendants, based on Genesis and giving figures for the time element contained in the biblical text, one can see that roughly 19 centuries passed between man's appearance on earth and the birth of Abraham. Today it is estimated that Abraham was alive in circa 1850 before Christ, and it has been deduced from this that the information provided by the Old Testament places man's appearance on earth at roughly 38 centuries before Christ. Luke was obviously guided by these data for his gospel. He expresses a blatant untruth for having copied them down, and we have already seen the decisive historical arguments leading to this statement. The idea that Old Testament data are unacceptable in the present day is duly admitted. They belong to the obsolete material referred to by the Second Vatican Council. The fact, however, that the Gospels take up the same scientifically incompatible data is an extremely serious observation which may be used to oppose those who defend the historical accuracy of the Gospel texts. Commentators have quickly sensed this danger. They try to get round the difficulty by saying that it is not a complete genealogical tree, that the evangelist has missed names out. They claim that this was done quite deliberately, and that his sole intention was to establish the broad lines or essential elements of a line of descent based on historical reality. There is nothing in the texts that permits them to form this hypothesis. In the text it says quite clearly, A was the father of B, or B was the son of A. For the part preceding Abraham in particular, the evangelist draws moreover on the Old Testament, where the genealogies are set out in the following form: when X had lived 10 years, he became the father of Y. When Y had lived 10 years, he became the father of Z. There is therefore no break. The part of Jesus's genealogy according to Luke, which precedes Abraham, is not acceptable in the light of modern knowledge. The period from Abraham to David. Here the 2 genealogies tally, or almost, excepting 1 or 2 names. The difference may be explained by copiers' errors. Does this mean that the evangelists are to be considered accurate? History situates David at circa 1000 before Christ and Abraham at 1800 to 1860 before Christ, 14 to 16 generations for roughly 8 centuries. Can one believe this? One might say that for this period the gospel texts are at the very limit of the admissible. The post-David period. It is a great pity, but unfortunately the texts no longer tally at all when it comes to establishing Joseph's line from David, and figuratively speaking, Jesus's, for the Gospel. Leaving aside the obvious falsification in the Codex Vesicantabrigensis concerning Luke, let us now compare what the two most venerable manuscripts have to offer, the Codex Vaticanus and the Codex Sinaiticus. In the genealogy according to Luke, 42 names are placed after David, number 35, down to Jesus, number 77. In the genealogy according to Matthew, 27 are mentioned after David, number 14, down to Jesus, number 41. The number of fictitious ancestors given to Jesus after David is therefore different in the two Gospels. The names themselves are different as well. This is not all. Matthew tells us that he discovered how Jesus's genealogy split up after Abraham into three groups of 14 names: first group from Abraham to David, second from David to the deportation to Babylon, third from the deportation to Jesus. His text does indeed contain 14 names in the first two groups, but in the third, from the deportation to Jesus, there are only 13 and not 14, as expected. The table shows that Shelthiel is number 29 and Jesus number 41. There is no variation of Matthew that gives 14 names for this group. To enable himself to have 14 names in his second group, Matthew takes very great liberties with the Old Testament text. The names of the first six descendants of David, number 15 to 20, tally with the data in the Old Testament, but the three descendants of Iram, number 20, given in Chronicles 11 of the Bible as Ahaziah, Josh, and Amaziah, are suppressed by Matthew. Elsewhere, Jehoniah, number 28, is for Matthew the son of Josiah, although Kings 2 of the Bible tells us that Eliakim comes between Josiah and Jehoniah. It may be seen from this that Matthew has altered the genealogical lines in the Old Testament to present an artificial group of 14 names between David and the deportation to Babylon. There is also the fact that one name is missing in Matthew's third group, so that none of the present-day Gospel texts contains the 42 names mentioned. What is surprising is not so much the existence of the omission itself, explained perhaps by a very old scribe's error that was subsequently perpetuated, but the almost total silence of commentators on this subject. How can one miss this omission? W. Trilling breaks this pious conspiracy of silence in his book The Gospel According to Matthew, L'Evangile selon Matthew, by devoting one line to it. It is a fact which is of considerable importance because the commentators of this Gospel, including the Ecumenical Translation and Cardinal Danielou among others, stress the great symbolical significance of Matthew's 3:14. This significance was so important for the evangelist that he suppressed biblical names without hesitation to arrive at his numerical demonstration. To make this hold good, commentators will, no doubt, construct some reassuring statements of an apologetic nature, justifying the fact that names have been craftily suppressed and carefully avoiding the omission that undermines the whole point of what the evangelist was trying to show. Commentaries of modern experts in exegesis. In his book The Gospels of Childhood, 1967, Les Evangiles de l'Enfance, Cardinal Danielou invests Matthew's numerical schematization with a symbolic value of paramount importance, since it is this that establishes Jesus' ancestry, which is asserted also by Luke. For him, Luke and Matthew are historians who have completed their historical investigations, and the genealogy has been taken down from the archives of Jesus' family. It must be added here that the archives have never been found. Cardinal Danielou condemns out of hand anyone who criticizes his point of view. It is the Western mentality, ignorance of Judeo-Christianity and the absence of a Semitic outlook that have made so many experts in exegesis lose their way when interpreting the Gospels. They have projected their own categories onto them: Sikh, Platonic, Cartesian, Hegelian, and Heideggerian. It is easy to see why everything is mixed up in their minds. Plato, Descartes, Hegel and Heidegger obviously have nothing to do with the critical attitude one may have towards these whimsical genealogies. In his search for the meaning of Matthew's 3:14, the author expands on strange suppositions. They are worth quoting here. What may be meant are the common 10 weeks of the Jewish apocalypse. The first three, corresponding to the time from Adam to Abraham, would have been subtracted, 7 weeks of years would then remain, the first six would correspond to the 6 times 7 representing the 3 groups of 14 and leaving the seventh, started by Christ with whom the seventh age of the world begins. Explanations like this are beyond comment. The commentators of the Ecumenical Translation, New Testament, also give us numerical variations of an apologetic nature which are equally unexpected, for Matthew's 3:14. 14 could be the numerical total of the 3 consonants in the Hebrew name David, D equals 4, B equals 6, hence 4 plus 6 plus 4 equals 14. 3:14 equals 6:7 and Jesus came at the end of the 6th week of holy history beginning with Abraham. For Luke, this translation gives 77 names from Adam to Jesus, allowing the number 7 to come up again, this time by dividing 77 by 7, 7 times 11 equals 77. It is quite apparent that for Luke the number of variations where words are added or subtracted is such that a list of 77 names is completely artificial. It does, however, have the advantage of adapting itself to these numerical games. The genealogies of Jesus as they appear in the Gospels may perhaps be the subject that has led Christian commentators to perform their most characteristic feats of dialectic acrobatics, on par indeed with Luke's and Matthew's imagination.